making TV special.
Venice. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Now that your pictures in the paper being perfectly admired, you can have it, a one that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is wow, 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 wow. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know it don't thrill you. I hope it don't kill you. Welcome to the working week. You gotta do it till you do it, till you better get to it. All of your family has to kill to survive. And this waiting for their big day to arrive. And then you are, I feel, they better be alive. Welcome to the working week. Oh, I know it don't thrill you. I hope it don't kill you. Welcome to the working week. You gotta do it till you do it, so you better get to it. I hear you saying that the shit's alright when you're only in a bag of numbers. Spend all your money getting so convinced that you never even thought of love. Sometimes I wonder if we're living in the same land. Why'd you wanna be my friend when I feel like the children running out of hands? Welcome to the working week. Welcome to the working week.
Welcome to the working week, indeed, my friends. Welcome to a B-side episode from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. This is the B-side of episode 157, coming in a little bit early here on February 19th, 2010, before big episode 158. The B-sides are extra episodes when I know there's so much news I won't be able to cram it into the flagship two-hour program. So we have so much to go over just in this B-side. And I hope you're doing well wherever and whenever you are in the world. I say good morning to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Recording live. So going back to Elvis Costello's Welcome to the Working Week, the first track off his first record, came out the week I was born, second week of August 1977. I find that record very pertinent to me. I see it as the beginning of punk as the reaction to the 70s arena rock, disco, excess. My aim is true. And that's what I try and do. So let's get into it. We're going to cover a little bit from all three sites. Foodworldorder.com, cyberspacewar.com, and of course, mediamonarchy.com. Think Tank urges UK to cut working week to 21 hours. This from the BBC. The working week should be cut to 21 hours to help boost the economy and improve the quality of life, a left-wing think tank has said. The New Economics Foundation, neweconomics.org, claimed in a report that reduction in hours would help to ease unemployment and overwork. The think tank said people were working longer hours now than 30 years ago, even though the unemployment was at 2.5 mil. The foundation admitted people would earn less, but said they would have more time to carry out worthy tasks. They would have better scope to look after children or other dependents. There would be more opportunity for civic duties, and older people could even delay retirement. So we have the press release and all the related ephemera from the New Economics Foundation. You can download their report, 21 Hours, Why a Shorter Working Week Can Help Us All to Flourish in the 21st Century. Direct link for the PDF. And that's what I try and do on MediaMonarchy.com, is give you that extra bit of information that a lot of the other sites don't do. If we're going to talk about a new report, let's link up that report. So this is a funny one that, in a way, is really true. because you really shouldn't spend your whole life working some job you may not like or may even hate. And there are tons of more worthwhile things to do. But it's interesting, the selling of it in that way. However, you know, they're just looking at the corporate bottom line. So we have a few related EconoCrash updates. Of course, it should be no news to you that we're now into a good year and a half, 2 years of the new financial world order. It's the latest and greatest scam going. And it's been going for a long time. But the last major act of any floundering, crumbling republic is the looting. White House projects long-term mass unemployment. That's from Global Research. The big new Obamasiah budget would actually redistribute $112 billion from the top 1% of taxpayers. And we get tons more on this story from allgov.com and taxfoundation.org. It's all fake money anyway. You may as well throw the 99% of us a bone. But remember, it's always profits being privatized and debt being socialized. Desolate malls and empty offices may come soon. This from MSNBC, and you know we've been tracking the dead malls for quite some time now. Deadmalls.com. Greek financial ministry unveils tax reform and wage policy. More on that from Reuters. And I believe we'll have more from the banksters and Greece coming up. The last EconoCrash note on this Working Week post. Dubai world debt strategy sends stocks tumbling. More on that from Times Online. And now we're going to jump over to foodworldorder.com. And our first story comes from India Today. Whistleblower reveals Monsanto faked data for approvals in India. The debate on genetically modified brinjal variety continues to generate heat. Now let's double check just what brinjal is. A plant bears the fruit, commonly used as a vegetable, closely related to the tomato. Oh, and Wikipedia redirects to eggplant. So there you go. I needed to double check that. Beginning again. The debate on genetically modified eggplant variety continues to generate heat. Former managing director of Monsanto India, Turuvadi Jagadeesan, and the name's linked up. Do more searching. He's now the latest to join the critics of the aforementioned GM brinjal. Perhaps the first industry insider to do so. He worked with Monsanto for nearly two decades, including 8 years as the managing director of India operations, and he spoke against the new variety during the public consultation held in Bangalore last Saturday. This past Monday, he elaborated by saying the company, quote, used to fake scientific data, end quote. They used to fake scientific data submitted to government regulatory agencies to get commercial approvals for its products in India. More on this from FarmWars.info. Whistleblower reveals Monsanto faked data for approvals in India. And we can take a flashback to DailyMail.co.uk for the disturbing article of about a year and a half ago, The GM Genocide. Thousands of Indian farmers are committing suicide after using genetically modified crops. Our next post on foodworldorder.com is a binge and purge of three different stories. And it's been a little while since we've had some Onion satire. So let's go to the Onion right now.
A new cereal for the poor stays crunchy in water. It's the Onion Radio News. I'm Doyle Redland. Kellogg's unveiled Poros today, a new cereal served with water instead of milk. It's targeted to the nation's massive below-the-poverty-line demographic. Kellogg spokesman Bernard Fitch.
When your dirty, naked children try delicious new Poros, we're confident they'll find them waterfully delicious.
Kellogg says the cereal also stays crunchy in malt liquor. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
So we're on the 218 Binge and Purge on foodworldorder.com. Onion cereal, cancer gum, and eating animals. So let's jump to the cancer gum by way of Canada.com and the Regina Leader Post. A substance used to make chewing gum could soon be declared toxic by the federal government after an international agency found that it might cause cancer in lab rats. On May 17th, so it's a little ways to go, the government will publish a list of 17 substances that may be labeled as toxic in a draft report on risk assessment. Acetic acid ethanol ester, or vinyl acetate, commonly used as a base in some chewing gums, could be on that list, Health Canada said past Monday. The substance is a colorless liquid with a strong, sweet scent that can be used as a flavoring agent. When made into a polymer, it becomes useful in the production of chewing gum. Links up there for more on vinyl acetate. Our last story comes from foodsafetynews.com, highlighting a recent guest on the Colbert Report, Jonathan Safran Foer, F-O-E-R, author of Eating Animals, eatinganimals.com, linked up, discuss the high incidence of foodborne illness and the state of American agriculture on the Colbert Report last week. Why should I become a vegetarian? What is wrong with the meat, sir? Satirical host Stephen Colbert asked Foer. On top of calling factory farms and industrial agriculture, quote, perfectly antithetical to American values, Foer discussed food poisoning statistics and the dangers of increasing antibiotic resistance as a reason for cutting back on meat consumption. When Colbert asked Foer if eating factory farm meat or tortured flesh, as Foer describes it in the book, made the people who eat it become tortured flesh, Foer fired back with often cited foodborne illness statistics, saying, quote, in the most literal sense, in the most scientifically objective sense, we are hurting our bodies. 76 million Americans get food poisoning every year, and the CDC has said the primary culprit is animal agriculture. Now, I also added a link for you to watch a rare live clip of the Smiths doing Mia's murder. And there is a comment on this post. Vegaya. More on Jonathan Safran Foer going vegan with a link to veganvideo.org. And our last post on foodworldorder.com gets a whole hell of a lot uglier by way of naturalnews.com with more from foodbev.com, sweetpoison.com, and the Huffington Post. Aspartame renamed AminoSweet and now being marketed as a natural sweetener. In response to the growing awareness about the dangers of artificial sweeteners, what does the manufacturer of one of the world's most notable artificial sweeteners do? Why, rename it and begin marketing it as natural, of course. This is precisely the strategy of Ajinomoto, A-J-I-N-O-M-O-T-O, Ajinomoto, maker of aspartame, which hopes to pull the wool over the eyes of the public with its rebranded version of aspartame called AminoSweet. Over 25 years ago, aspartame was first introduced into the European food supply, with actually a PDF of one of the original arguments concerning aspartame. Today, it's an everyday component of most diet beverages, sugar-free desserts, and chewing gums in countries worldwide. But the tides have been turning as the general public is waking up to the truth about artificial sweeteners like aspartame and the harm they cause to health. The latest aspartame marketing scheme is a desperate effort to indoctrinate the public into accepting the chemical sweetener as natural and safe, despite all the evidence to the contrary. We do have some flashbacks back to episode 89 of CorbettReport.com. Meet Donald Rumsfeld, a song from Superdrag and their latest record, Industry Giants, called Aspartame, which we played on Media Monarchy back in March of 2009. And the third flashback goes way back to November of 07. 11-year-old girl shames the FDA by doing their job for them. Now, what does this all connect to? There's a lot of info, fortunately, and that's what naturalnews.com is talking about, that has come out about aspartame. But it's been said that Donald Rumsfeld's, in a way, like the devil, or definitely a big devil. He seems to be there at every major bad event in the last few decades. So let's hear a brief clip on aspartame and the connections in the past to Donald Rumsfeld.
Ultimately, he made the decision not to find out what the facts were, but to move forward on the limited record that they had before them. And I believe it was a decision that was made that said we can accomplish our ends better legally and politically than we can by actually doing the science that determine the outcome of the questions that are being asked. And in my mind, that demonstrated that he was an individual not interested in facts, not interested in the truth, not interested in finding out what the fundamental realities are, but much, much more interested in setting a goal and then by will and force, pulling all the resources that he could possibly pull together to achieve that goal, i.e. get NutraSweet on the market and sold.
And so Donald Rumsfeld had been in all these meetings and known all of these potentially very harmful effects of the substance that he then went on and continued to market.
Well, I can't say what Donald Rumsfeld knew or didn't know. He's not a scientist. He's not very interested in science, from what I can tell. More or less, he's a fixer. He's an operative. You assign him a job, and he goes and he does it. Now, I'm sure that as he gets up into the level of Defense Department, he sort of makes up his own jobs and says, "I'm going to do these things." But facts are not all that important to how he proceeds, because he's so confident that he knows what the outcome should be that he will look across, at least in the way he did in NutriSweet, he looked across the horizon to find all those facts that would support his position and then minimized or denigrated all the facts that didn't support his position.
In 1980, the Public Board of Inquiry voted unanimously to reject the use of aspartame until additional studies could be done on aspartame's potential to cause brain tumors.
The product was said not to be. It was ruled by law. It was said you cannot market this product. And then they had to go and do a quick political triage and get in there and manipulate the process. So, I mean, the manipulation was so powerful that one of the first things that Ronald Reagan did when he became president was suspend the authority of the FDA commissioner to take any action. So he was sworn in whatever day in January, and the next day he issued an executive order eliminating the FDA commissioner's authority to take action. There was obviously a fear on the part of somebody that the commissioner was going to do something about NutraSweet or something else that would create difficulty, because it took him a while to get a new commissioner. It took him a little over a month to get a new commissioner, get the old one out and the new one in. And in that month, the old commissioner was prevented from taking any actions by an executive order. And that takes a high level of political clout to do that. But that's political triage on a situation that had gone sour because Rumsfeld had made the decision to just power his way through and ignore getting the facts.
So that's just a brief little bit on Donald Rumsfeld's connections to NutraSweet and aspartame and the FDA. A fixer or a devil? You decide. We're going to shift gears over to cyberspacewar.com, my latest site. I started it way back in June of 2009. We did it to track all the new memes that seemed to come immediately with the Obama-Saya presidency, the hacked presidency of Space War. So the first thing we're going to hit is just a list of headlines. We'll extrapolate on a few of them. But this was posted up yesterday, February 18th, DEFCON 218, System Security, CIA Startups, and CERN. We're going to start off with one from the Washington Post. More than 75,000 computer systems hacked in one of the largest cyber attacks. More than 75,000 computer systems at nearly 2,500 companies in the U.S. and around the world have been hacked in what appears to be one of the largest and most sophisticated attacks by cyber criminals discovered to date, this according to a Northern Virginia security firm. The attack, which began in late 2008 and was discovered last month, targeted proprietary corporate data, emails, credit card transaction data, and login credentials at companies in the health and technology industries in 196 countries, according to Herndon-based NetWitness. News of the attack follows reports last month that the computer networks at Google and more than 30 other large financial, energy, defense, technology, and media firms had been compromised. Google said the attack on its system originated in China. The latest attack does not appear to be linked to the Google intrusion, says Amit Yoran, NetWitness's chief executive, but it is significant, he said, in its scale and in its apparent demonstration that the criminal group's sophistication in cyber attacks is approaching that of nation states such as China and Russia. We covered, of course, the Google-China hack attack recently. But on down the list, from Fox, massive hack attack shows major flaws in today's cybersecurity. We need more control. Shell security under the microscope after a massive data leak. More from ComputerWorldUK.com. Google facing lawsuit over Buzz privacy in federal court. Buzz, of course, being their new social network update tie-in to Gmail. But here's an interesting one from theregister.co.uk. CIA-linked startup touts all-seeing eye for net spooks. A security startup with close links to the Central Intelligence Agency is touting a system to the UK government that monitors every IP address on the internet for malware as part of its declared aim of improving cyber war capabilities. Endgame Systems helps U.S. intelligence identify and hack into vulnerable networks and is targeting a similar role in Britain's nascent national cybersecurity operations. The firm, founded in June 2008 in Atlanta, has built a massive and constantly updated database of security breaches across the globe. It's currently monitoring about 250 million compromised machines. So let's repeat that second sentence. Endgame Systems helps U.S. intelligence identify and hack into vulnerable networks. CIA-linked startup Endgame Systems touts all-seeing eye. Hottest temperature ever. Head science to Big Bang. More on that from Yahoo. Oh, but that's not all. CERN, the Large Hadron Collider to fire up next Thursday. LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, the most powerful particle smasher ever assembled by the human race and possible portal to other dimensions, is to fire up its beams following the Christmas break in about a week's time. Official spokesmen for the International Particle Punishing Science Alliance, CERN, have thus far remained cagey about the exact date for the mighty machine's restart, but persons familiar with the matter tell theregister.co.uk that the 2010 proton billiard season is set to open on Thursday, February 25th. CERN firing up again. Will we see bizarre spirals in Norway? or something much, much, much worse. White House embraces ebook readers. More from ArsTechnica.com. As well from them, Obama administration tweaks its cybersecurity plans. USA Today is talking about how the youngsters like Facebook more than blogging and Twitter. And so, speaking of, the CIA and NSA want you to be their friend on Facebook. More on that from Cryptogon.com. Out in the open, engaging the American public in propaganda. Your money. Your zeros and ones. Blocked Pirate Bay users flock to other torrent sites. More on that from torrentfreak.com. And from The Telegraph, traffic chaos as Russian hacker beams porno onto billboard. The last note on this DEFCON 218 system security, CIA startups, and CERN, washingtonsblog.com asking the question, is the web making us passive? And that's one to ponder. Now, my friends, we're going to return to MediaMonarchy.com for further elaboration on a story we covered last week. MediaMonarchy.com being one of the first and main places, along with CyberspaceWar.com, to cover Cyber Shockwave, which took place this past Tuesday on February 16th. So my original post, which we went over last week on CyberspaceWar.com, Miltech Insiders to Stage Cyber Shockwave Drill, is now updated and linked up on MediaMonarchy.com. Cyber Shockwave, former U.S. officials in cyber attack simulation. Let's get a little bit from the AFP, the agency French press. Former top U.S. intelligence officials became cyber warriors on Tuesday in a simulation of how the U.S. government would respond to a massive cyber attack on the United States. The scenario itself was secret, said Eileen McMenamin, vice president of communications for the Bipartisan Policy Center, bipartisanpolicy.org, which was hosting the event called Cyber Shockwave. The participants didn't know what it was. None of them know or knew what was going to transpire. So for Cyber Shockwave, a room at the Mandarin Hotel was transformed into the White House Situation Room, where the president and his top advisors typically meet to address national emergencies. All those different screens with the different info coming in, members of the cabinet are going to have to react in real time as they would in real life. Images of George Bush sitting in a classroom, notwithstanding. What's interesting, and what I didn't know last week, is more on the connections of the people who were involved in this drill. Cyber Shockwave lasted for 3 hours from 10 to 1 on the East Coast last Tuesday. Sponsored by General Dynamics Advanced Information Systems, S-Mobile Systems, Southern Co. Is that Southern Comfort? Georgetown University, and PayPal. That's right. 3 years ago, the Bipartisan Policy Commission and Securing America's Future Energy, SAFE, staged another simulation, Oil Shockwave, which examined U.S. dependence on foreign oil as a national security threat. The nonprofit BPC was founded in 2007 by four former Senate Majority Leaders, Democrats George Mitchell and Tom Daschle, and Republicans Howard Baker and Bob Dole. So who was involved in this drill? The Cyber Shockwave simulation was drawn up by Michael Hayden, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and by members of the BPC's National Security Preparedness Group. Former President George W. Bush's Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff played the role of National Security Advisor to the President, while former Director of National Intelligence John Negroponte played the role of Secretary of State. Frances Townsend, Bush's Homeland Security advisor, was promoted to Homeland Security Secretary, while former Deputy CIA Director John McLaughlin was bumped up to Director of National Intelligence. Joe Lockhart, former President Bill Clinton's press secretary, served as counselor to the president. Other participants include retired General Charles Wald, the former deputy commander of U.S. European Command, who was playing the Secretary of Defense, and former Deputy Attorney General Jamie Gorelick, who played the Attorney General. Those names should all ring bells. Whether it's all the Clinton scandals or all the 9/11 octopus connections, it's the same cast of characters. Oh, yeah, they're bipartisan, all right. So in order to drill this in, cyber shockwave, I pulled together a few different clips, so we're going to hear some things from CNN, Russia Today, and even some raw video from Cyber Shockwave, former U.S. officials, and of course all the private military contractors in a cyber attack simulation.
The game was sponsored by the Bipartisan Policy Center, and it simulated, as you said, a massive cyber attack on the U.S. Former government and business leader played the parts of top officials. There was a fake news channel. The scenario was entirely fictional, but the issues could not be more real.
Up to 20 million and counting of the nation's cell phones have stopped working so far today in what officials claim is the largest communications crisis in the cell phone era.
The reason? A cyber attack. As government officials convene, there is one overarching question.
Is this an act of war, not a criminal act?
The infected smartphones show a video of the Red Army, raising speculation the Russians are behind the attack. Meanwhile, the crisis expands.
Instances of identity theft and online financial fraud have increased dramatically.
Officials discuss the possibility of shutting down the infected smartphones, but government can't do it.
I'm actually shocked to hear that we don't have this authority. If this was someone with smallpox wandering through the Super Bowl, we would have the authority to quarantine them.
Can the military assist? What powers does the president have?
We are operating in a bit of uncharted territory, as you know.
The attack is traced to a server in Russia. If the U.S. shuts it down, will the Russians see it as an act of war? And is Russia really behind the attack? Then more grim news. The internet is infected, the power grid impacted.
We are also now receiving alarming reports of significant and growing power outages in major metropolitan areas in the eastern half of the United States.
There is discussion of nationalizing the power grid or mobilizing the National Guard to protect it.
But keep in mind, there are over 160,000 miles of transmission lines. You cannot guard every mile of that.
And the cyber attack goes on.
And in corporate boardrooms and IT centers across the country, our nation's leaders are wondering if their networks are really secure and if this crisis might indeed spread into their systems.
The questions raised by the exercise involve vulnerabilities, roles and responsibilities, legal authorities, private sector cooperation, public messaging, political fallout, military retaliation, defensive capabilities. The goal of the exercise was to put these issues on the table for discussion and perhaps resolution before there's a real and massive cyber attack.
Up to 20 million and counting of the nation's cell phones have stopped working so far today in what officials claim is the largest communications crisis in the cell phone era.
As I know you're all well aware, this smartphone botnet attack that we're currently experiencing represents a serious problem that has the potential to become even more serious.
Clearly, our communications infrastructure is being attacked. But by whom? For what purpose?
What's being called a predictable surprise, the day hackers take control of our computers and cell phones and corrupt the system. U.S. government leaders say if it were to happen soon, we would not be prepared. RT's Christine Ferdow joins us for the rest of the story in this video. Hi there, Christine. So what did you find today?
Well, it was really interesting. When we talk about former government leaders, these are people who worked under former presidents and had a vested interest in national security, including the former director of intelligence. Now, the point of today's exercise, and it was like a several-hour exercise, and the point was to show that if, in fact, terrorists decide to attach our communication system, it's going to be a mess.
Attention hackers, the next terrorist attack will likely be in your hands.
Everything we do in modern life, pretty much all over the world, depends upon the internet.
So former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff and other former government leaders spent the day posing as members of the National Security Council and dealt with a simulated cyber attack, complete with a simulated news report.
Clearly, our communications infrastructure is being attacked.
It starts with a college basketball March Madness application for cell phones. The supposed hacker uses it to gain access to all the information stored inside.
Up to 20 million and counting of the nation's cell phones have stopped working.
Another fear is that with a push of a couple buttons and an internet connection, experienced hackers could get inside your computer. Except instead of shutting the system down completely, they'd take total control of your personal information.
So that people's bank accounts began to either increase or decrease by a random amount. That would not only mess up the bank's internal accounting, but it would cause a crisis of confidence in the banking system.
NSC members worked diligently through their clues to get to the bottom of the source. The first suspect?
The video clips contain the shots of the Red Army. There is suspicion that it could well have originated in some part of Russia.
Both Russia and China a real threat, according to those on the simulated council. And at this moment, the U.S. government is still lagging.
Here in D.C., I mean, we just saw record snowfall. The city could barely handle that. How can we expect that our government's going to be able to handle a cyber attack?
Well, you know, the great lesson of the snowfall is it's all about preparation. The more prepared you are, the better it is and the better able you are to deal with the consequences of a disaster, whether it be natural or man-made.
So, based on these exercises, are we prepared?
Well, clearly not.
This is a vulnerability, and it needs to be dealt with.
Especially with so many people now using smartphones.
The smartphones really are walking around computers, and they need to be protected with security software the same as the computer systems do.
If not, it could affect everything, from banks to electrical grids, even travel, paralyze the system, and spread.
An incident in one part of the country or in one part of our society could spread very rapidly to the society as a whole. I think that's the nature of the problem.
The solution still seems a long way off.
Christine, why did they use cell phones and not computers for the simulation?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. One of them is they say that technologically speaking, we are far more advanced in dealing with securing our laptops and our desktop, anything computer related. We have spyware, we have antivirus. We don't have that on our cell phones. And just basically everyone I know, I don't know about you, everyone I know has a smartphone. So basically you're carrying around a mini computer that's not protected. But there is another reason. S Mobile Communications was a big part in today's simulation. I think that they probably put forth some of the funding for it. Guess what they do? They make software for security software for your cell phones.
Surprise, surprise. Did they say where they think that another attack might come from?
You know, they, as you saw in the story, they said Russia has the capabilities. China has the capabilities. But you know, when I was talking to John Negroponte, he said something very interesting. He said he could see more, it would be more feasible that it would be a criminal group, so some sort of mafia type group that had an interest in doing this to get what they wanted.
Wow, interesting. Perhaps even within the United States itself. Archie's Christine Frizzell, thank you.
A lot of fascinating connections contained within cyber shockwave. Cyberspacewar.com, indeed. The last thing we want to note, tying in with this, and again, we're just giving you the tip of the iceberg on this, and hopefully I've provided the links and things for you to go do more research on this yourself. What this reminds me of, and what I have linked up, and what we're going to last mention as a flashback note, was something called Operation Dark Winter. On June 22nd and 23rd of 2001, just under 3 months before 9/11, the U.S. military held a senior-level war game at Andrews Air Force Base called Dark Winter. The scenario of this bioterrorism drill was designed to simulate a smallpox attack in three states, in which one of these states would be Pennsylvania. As part of this war game, scripted TV news clips were made to help this drill as realistic as possible. To help make this drill as realistic as possible. I have the five of the Operation Dark Winter fake news clips linked up on youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. They've got thousands of views. And again, this was a drill involving all the private military industrial complex contractors and all their front men and women and their fixers. We have to mention yet again that Professor Lawrence Lessig, as well as folks like Richard Clark, have said there is an I Patriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting for an I-9/11 event. So we're going to leave cyberspacewar.com and return home to Media Monarchy. And this all connects because we're talking about the drills. Let's hop back on MediaMonarchy.com and get some of the latest 9/11 updates. GOP, Dems, the media, and the peace movement. The first story by way of the Dallas Morning News, I believe, transpired two Thursdays ago on the 11th. And I didn't catch it in time for last week's show. But if we jump over to DallasNews.com, Deborah Medina's 9/11 remark pushes campaign off track. Deborah Medina's campaign for Texas governor tumbled and spent last Thursday, February 11th, trying to right itself after the Republican iconoclast didn't immediately dismiss a fringe theory that the Bush administration played a role in the 9/11 attacks. Medina was speaking on Glenn Beck's nationally broadcast radio program when the host asked her if she believed the American government had any involvement in the destruction of the World Trade Center. She said, quote, "I think some very good questions have been raised in that regard. There are some very good arguments, and I think the American people have not seen all the evidence there, so I've not taken a position." Her opponents in the GOP campaign for governor, Kay Bailey Hutchinson and Rick Perry, were super quick to criticize Medina's comments, as was the former head of FEMA, Joe Albaugh. 9/11 truth is the hot rail of phony left-right politics on the world stage. And we love it when they touch the third rail, because that's what we want. More on that story from redactednews.blogspot.com with a letter to Rachel Maddow on the Deborah Medina situation. But an interesting piece from Global Research on the media response to the growing influence of 9/11 truth. Now, this article was probably written before this latest round of public outing and the touching the third rail of 9/11 truth. But the Global Research piece seems to say that it's actually become a little more favorable towards questions about 9/11. Barry Zwicker has a new piece, and it's posted up on 911blogger.com, The Peace Movement versus 9/11 Truth. But a second Congress critter, a GOP rep named Jason Chaffetz, agrees with concerns of 9/11 truthers, saying there's still a lot to learn. Now, I have thinkprogress.org linked up. They're, of course, foundation-funded, no friend to 9/11 truth. But good job for We Are Change Utah for making this happen. Theirs is the video that's making the rounds with this story. They ask him about reopening into 9/11. So he'll be bashed as well. And we'll see if he has to backtrack like Deborah Medina did. So again, constantly pushing the 9/11 question, the one neither side of the phony political paradigm want to touch. No prosecutions for the puppet criminal Bush administration from Pelosi and Reid and Obama. off the table, my friends. Yet another congressman questions 9/11 from Washington's blog, where they go into all the other folks who have spoken out about 9/11. And the first of a couple flashbacks from the fantastic complete 9/11 timeline from historycommons.org, jumping back to 1992, small knives used in hijackings, FAA memo warns. But there's a clip about the possible upcoming KSM and the 9/11 patsies trial that ultimately the government doesn't want a public 9/11 trial. And we have, of course, noted that the four they want to try are the four that have already said they plan to plead guilty. Olbermann kind of blames Bush and Cheney for 9/11 attacks. He's on a weak, limited hangout, lie-hop stance, let it happen on purpose. More on that from Raw Story. Good news, Spanish inquiry of alleged Bush-era war crimes began last Monday, February 15th, in a Madrid courtroom. I believe it was expected that the first witness would be Dr. William F. Pepper, who, of course, has done fantastic work for 9/11 Truth, MLK Truth, RFK Truth. So we'll have to keep an eye out on the Spanish inquiry. Taliban pressed bin Laden on anti-U.S. terror. That really breaks it down, and that may have been one of the original sources of this news story, axisoflogic.com. But let's jump to allgov.com for a simple breakdown for you and ask the question, did the Taliban try to stop Osama terror attacks? The long-assumed relationship between Osama bin Laden and the Taliban is now being questioned because of declassified information from the State Department. As discussed in a journal published by the Combating Terrorism Center at the U.S. Army's West Point Academy, the Taliban's top leader, Mullah Muhammad Omar, reportedly tried to isolate bin Laden after the 98 terror attacks in Africa carried out by al-Qaeda operatives in order to keep him from plotting again against U.S. targets. The claim that Omar wanted to limit bin Laden's anti-U.S. campaign was based on accounts from Egyptian jihadist Abul Walid al-Masri, who had connections with both camps. Also, the story in the CTC Sentinel recounts an incident in 1999 when the Taliban attempted to take over bin Laden's personal security, resulting in a shootout. The Taliban eventually assumed control of bin Laden's compound and seized his satellite phone. The Obama administration has maintained the assertions of the Bush White House that Omar supported al-Qaeda's attack on 9/11. However, the Taliban has insisted that it has no interest in al-Qaeda's global ambitions. Of course, it went down the memory hole, but the Taliban offered to try and turn over bin Laden if the U.S. would offer any kind of evidence that bin Laden was connected to 9/11. And we know from his FBI Most Wanted poster that he is not officially wanted for 9/11. No hard evidence. The second flashback from historycommons.org goes back to 91. Terrorists plan to crash planes into buildings in Madrid. It's at this point, on this February 19th morning in 2010, you're going to start to notice some themes. State-sponsored terror. Suspicious activities, man. The mass murder contagion. Planes into buildings. With the last 9/11 update note on this posting, GOP, Dems, the media, and the peace movement. Barney Carrick, disgraced 9/11 quote-unquote hero and ex-NYPD head, has been sentenced to 4 years in prison. If we just hit up the New York Times real quick. Dateline, White Plains, New York. Bernard B. Carrick, Former New York police commissioner who rose to national prominence was sentenced to 4 years in prison on Thursday after pleading guilty to 8 felony charges, including tax fraud and lying to White House officials. Our last post we're going to go over on this B-side, episode 157 from MediaMonarchy.com, is another massive news purge posted up yesterday, February 18th. Get out of your bed. You got to wake up. Which is a reference to a new single from one of my favorite bands, Sloan, that I got to see Wednesday night here in town. We're going to play that song when we kick off episode 158 coming up in a very short bit. But first, the massive news purge. Let's start off with all the biowarfare enviro health updates and get the depressing truth about antidepressants, that they're no better than placebos. So says Newsweek.com, but we're going to get more from Newsweek.com in just a moment. So you got to figure out which, you know, you're going to keep the baby or the bathwater, or what kind of information are you going to... I digress. On the eugenics tip, Tomorrow's Children, go watch that movie on YouTube. From ldexpress.co.uk, implant will stop me from having more kids. Big Pharma researcher admits to faking dozens of research studies for Pfizer and Merck. That's from naturalnews.com, and that sure sounds familiar. Faking data, like Monsanto did to get approvals in India. Radioactive plume spread over Vermont, and the feds slammed for inaction. I admittedly don't know very much about this story, but it's linked up from digitaljournal.com. The last Enviro Health note is another good one. UN Climate Chief Ivo de Boer to resign. No doubt in wake of ClimateGate. TV. On to the Econo Crash updates. Another reference to The Onion, but an article this time about the financial system that actually reveals the truth. As we've noted, The Onion is, of course, very, very skilled at. Reading from The Onion. The U.S. economy ceased to function this week after unexpected existential remarks by Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke shocked Americans into realizing that money is, in fact, just a meaningless and intangible social construct. What began as a routine report before the Senate Finance Committee Tuesday ended with Bernanke passionately disavowing the entire concept of currency and negating in an instant the very foundation of the world's largest economy. Though raising interest rates is unlikely at the moment, the Fed will, of course, act appropriately if we, said Bernanke, who then paused for a moment, looked down at his prepared statement and shook his head in utter disbelief. You know what? It doesn't matter. None of this. The so-called money really matters at all. Meaningless pieces of paper with numbers printed on them. Worthless. This goes into the cruel cosmic joke and the zeros and ones that, again, that's what good satire is. An exclusive from blacklistednews.com, FDIC opens massive new office near Chicago to handle the coming tidal wave of Midwest bank closings that the FDIC is expecting. The bankrupt Sheila Bair-run FDIC. NationalExpositor.com has the Morgan Stanley strategist saying, literally, head for the hills. We've got a clip from ABC News, but we break it down with the poll quote for you that basically get ready for tax hikes that aren't even imaginable. Washington Times reporting on the new underground economy, where they note that now nearly 17 million and growing Americans are shunning banks and the banksters. It's really quite simple. Illinois Senate held a private meeting at the State House. More on that from the Chicago Tribune. Private sessions. They're probably looking at their plan B as states begin to crumble. A bomb exploded at J.P. Morgan's offices in Athens, Greece. More from the Wall Street Journal. In the last EconoCrash note, Obama signs law raising public debt limit from $12.4 trillion to $14.3 trillion. We noted the passage of that bill just a couple weeks ago. Now His Highness has signed it into law. Now into geopolitics, which this time is admittedly seemingly focused on Israel. That would be the other third rail of geopolitics. But there was a recent assassination of a Hamas leader that is now reportedly being done by a Mossad hit squad that stole UK IDs and passports to kill Hamas leader.
These are the faces of the 11 suspects wanted in connection with the assassination of a senior Hamas commander, among them 6 British and 3 Irish passport holders. The gang also includes a woman. Now, these photographs have been passed to Interpol to lead an international hunt, one that Hamas says will ultimately lead to Israel. Allegations of Israeli secret service agents carrying out the murder are forced by police to go public with their investigation. And this hotel CCTV footage, according to the investigators, shows everything except the actual killing itself. Here's the victim, Hamas commander Mahmoud al-Mahbou. He is allegedly followed by the team of professional killers. Al-Mahbou was found suffocated to death in his room a day after his murder on January the 20th. Police chiefs claim to have solved the crime in 24 hours, but have waited until now to go public to comply with official Interpol procedure. Hamas has blamed Israel for the killing.
If the Israeli machine was behind this, if it was any side, whoever they are, any government behind this, it doesn't matter who they are, Israeli or Arab, we will take all the necessary legal steps and arrest warrants will be sent out.
These mourners at al-Mabou's funeral have no doubt which government directed the assassination. Dubai police have stopped short of naming any particular country, but did say agents of certain countries had been instructed to carry out the murder. Israel accuses al-Mahbou of smuggling rockets into the Gaza Strip. Hamas admitted he was involved in the kidnapping and killing of 2 Israeli soldiers in 1989. Top Hamas figures have denied reports that al-Mahbou was en route to Iran, which is a major Hamas backer. But the group has not given any clear reasons for his ultimately fatal presence in Dubai. Ashish Joshi, Sky News, Dubai.
We've got more from, I believe, newsjunkiepost.com. Dubai police chief says he's 99% sure the Mossad was behind this killing. And a related article from theregister.co.uk bringing up more questions over biometric ID cards and national security. Israel accused of waging covert war across Middle East. That from Times Online. A fascinating story that, of course, made its way, I believe, widely around the webs. Or maybe it didn't. I know that was one of those things that a couple days after I had bookmarked the article but hadn't posted up the headline for it, some, you know, points out, hey, did you hear that story? It's like, yeah, it's bookmarked. I just haven't posted it yet. But, of course, you maybe heard about Palestinians posing as characters from Avatar at a rally against an Israeli barrier, bringing another whole set of symbolism and occult media geopolitical memes. And that's essentially what MediaMonarchy.com is about. Now, from Iran's state media, Press TV, they're citing a poll that says Europeans say Jews exploit the past to extort money. Now, letting go of the third rail of geopolitics, jump over to Ukraine. Yanukovych claims victory in Ukraine election. More on that from the BBC. A new piece from Webster Tarpley, Again, his great new reformatted site, tarpley.net. It's got all his articles, all his radio shows, all his videos and media appearances and books. It's the website he's needed for a long time, tarpley.net. Slaughters the sacred cow of the Dalai Lama. Frontman for a feudal clique, darling of wealthy mystics and cold warriors. But you can get the main line from the Big Brother Corporation, flip-flop diplomacy with the Dalai Lama. A few headlines from History Mystery. French soldiers used as nuclear guinea pigs. More on that from the French agency press. And again, it's all those examples that when people say, governments would never do things like that. Even though we constantly see, if at least apologies being made 40, 50 years later about something. Descartes was poisoned by a Catholic priest. More on that from The Guardian. He was a heretic. But we've got a video piece and a couple different articles linked up to Not Another Conspiracy as well as Washington's blog. But basically, the U.S. has a history of attacking themselves to go to war. And along with that, other governments admit they carry out false flag terror. An interesting note from allgov.com, last member of an ancient tribe dies and a language is lost. And a new clip shows JFK arriving at Love Field in Dallas in 1963. New footage, of course, from the sixth floor nauseam. So into some of the media memes, and we reference Newsweek. They have a new article, Know Your Conspiracies. That is, of course, debunked and put down handily by Paul Joseph Watson. Olympics, Inc., inside their secretive $6 billion world of the International Olympic Committee. A fascinating slideshow piece from BusinessInsider.com. Dead foreigners are good for ratings, but not dead Americans. This story from AllGov.com cites a guy named Dave Lindroff at pubrecord.org, the public record, where he notes that recently the Olympics had no problem showing the foreigner grisly footage of the Olympics death. But recently, when an Associated Press photo, I believe, of a death in Afghanistan of a guy getting hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, the NBC and all the other networks balked at it. Now, granted, they're slightly different, but still, we're spared the slaughter. So, if we want to reference the tortured flesh, you know, just as we're spared seeing what goes through, or what, you know, the animals go through before they make it to our plate, we don't get to see the coffins coming back. The last note of media memes. Bill Maher, sometimes so right, but generally so boorish and wrong. Bill Maher says Americans, quote, not bright enough to really understand the issues. And we're trying to prove him wrong. Police state updates. TSA to swab airline passengers' hands in search for explosives. Again from Dot Connector UK. But you can get the corporate media take from USA Today. TSA takes explosive screening to the flyers. Just almost reaching ridiculous proportions. 10,000 TSA staff to get secret intelligence, again from USA Today. We referenced the kid last week who was detained by the TSA and asked, how do you, or what do you think about 9/11? Because he had Arab flashcards, language cards, in his bag. Raw Replay picked up the story and maybe notes that he may sue the TSA. Mother Jones asked the question if police checkpoints are police profit centers. And of course, another note on the Christmas bomber, Mutalib. From the Washington Post, Mutalib was read Miranda rights 9 hours after arrest. And again, this is just a tussle over how they handled the situation afterwards, or how they talk about the situation. The two sides both love the war of terror. They just tussle over who's going to run it. And it's all the shadows cast on the wall for you. A story blowing up, linked up to ArsTechnica.com. Parents say school used webcam to spy on our kid at home. I think basically a school gave some kids, it's a free laptop to help you do your homework and you'll do better in school, but it had a webcam, I guess, that either videoed them or took photos of them or some disturbing way over the line thing. Girls' arrest for doodling raises concerns about zero tolerance. That's from CNN. As well from CNN, report says officers lose 243 Homeland Security guns. And if we jump over to New Jersey from WPIX.com, New Jersey cop bribed sex abuse victims with drugs. And it just gets uglier and uglier. The last chunk here on this 218 News Purge, get out of your bed, you gotta wake up. We're noting the war whores. And I saw this photo from darkgovernment.com, and I believe this is based in Germany. I'm not sure whose military it is or what private military contractors created this monstrosity, but it's the world's largest silencer. And as I note, and as I post the photo quite large for you, the world's largest silencer looks like a big, loud dick. I mean, there it is. There's the big shaft, there's the two balls on the side. It's, you know, it's base, but I can get a hoot out of it. Marine Corps busted over benzene contamination at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. More from SalemNews.com. And, of course, the U.S. launches massive attack on Taliban, of course, despite an Olympic truce, as I believe there usually is or is supposed to be, but it's seemingly countries like the United States and Israel and proxy states connected don't go by that truce. So Obama's war is, of course, surging right along, and the silence from the anti-war connection and the coverage and the agitation is deafening. U.S. launches Fallujah-style attack in Afghanistan. That's from Global Research. Despite tight controls, U.S. rocket truck kills 10 civilians. That's from Danger Room as well. This deadly Afghanistan rocket attack actually hits its target. The Washington Post notes that under Obama, more targeted killings than captures in counterterrorism efforts. And an angering note from allgov.com, and we note this time and time again. We know that all war is based on deceptions, but even if you believed in all this shit, wouldn't you think they'd at least take care of the people who fight those wars? But no, they don't do that. War widows fight to collect deceased spouses' benefits. Tom Burkhardt on anti-fascist calling goes into the defense budget soaring and security firms reaching huge profits and going offshore to avoid taxes. I believe we hit that in the last couple weeks on MediaMonarchy.com. 4 injured in military helicopter crash in West Virginia. More from MSNBC. There's a video and all the updates from theregister.co.uk. Raygun 747 missile zapping test video released. Of course, the cyberspace war is raging, arming the skies. But let's wrap up this B-side episode 157 with a note that I think ties in some of the memes that we've been talking about here. All these things of the war whores and planes into buildings. Something called Operation Aphrodite. That was basically a secret 1944 Air Force operation of unmanned aerial aircraft packed with explosives and remotely controlled into their targets. That's going to connect with what we've gone over on this previous episode, and it's going to connect to what we're going to get into coming up on episode 158 for MediaMonarchy.com. That's how we're going to go out on Operation Aphrodite. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. Always imploring you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Codenamed Operation Aphrodite, it would push the technological boundaries of radio control to new limits. Operation Aphrodite involved both the U.S. Army and Navy Air Forces. It was considered so dangerous they asked for pilots to volunteer. One who did was Ken Waters.
They needed volunteers for a special mission, but if you did it, you'd get credit for five missions and get the DFC, the Distinguished Flying Cross.
The plan was to turn an entire war-weary plane into a flying kamikaze bomb. The aircraft should be packed with 9 tons of explosives. 2 daredevil pilots would then fly the plane to 10,000 feet. They would arm the bomb and bail out, leaving a mother aircraft nearby to steer the bomb plane by radio control.
To take an aircraft off like that, that's rigged to blow up, you have to be a special person.
Flight control is handed over to a bombardier in the mother aircraft. He would guide the explosive-packed plane to its target.
You had to control the throttles, you had to control the climb and the dive of the aircraft, so there had to be a lot of very innovative ways to control that airplane with radio control.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images,
it's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.